Whether you're working out or working on your high score, you never settle for less. So why should it be any different when you choose your protein drink? Rockin' Protein comes in three delicious flavors, has 30 grams of protein, and is always made with fresh milk. So you're never left with that chalky taste. Rockin' Protein. Never settle for less than a great-tasting, high-quality protein drink. Visit rockinprotein.com to find Rockin' Protein wherever you are. Rockin' Protein and Shamrock Farms are registered trademarks of Shamrock Foods Company. Don't just take, give with the Instax Mini Evo, a hybrid camera and printer with a classic retro design and a host of new features. 10 lens effects and 10 film effects give you 100 different ways to express yourself. Show how you see the world with an instant high-quality print. Discover endless possibilities to create and share with the Instax Mini Evo. Find out more at instaxus.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, it is the meticulously prepped, always just looking, look at that outfit. It is dapper. It is
straight from the office.
Straight from the office, that's but right. He's ready to go. It's Matthew Penny, folks. What's going on, Penny?
Happy to be here, back in the frigid New England air. I'm no longer in Arizona, unfortunately, but selling into the New England Christmas spirit of the lovely Boston landscape.
Yeah, the seasons here are about to change dramatically for us because it is going to be like 30 plus Celsius, so like 85 degrees here. And like I'm looking out on the sky, like through my window right now, and there is not a cloud in the sky. It is primo beautiful shit. what are we talking here? We got down to 30 yet, Fahrenheit, Penny?
No, we're okay. Like it's weird. It's New England. It's like 60 degrees today, but it's going to drop down to 30 degrees at night. So it's all over the place. This is where allergies pop back up and all these different sicknesses because people can't fully adjust to what the heck's going on here. But we haven't gone into like the single digits or anything yet. So it's, yay, global warming for about the next 3 weeks until it dumps on us.
Penny, I'm a very tired human being because Laura's parents are out of town, and we had to go over and cat sit their lovely cat Phoebe, who is a stray cat who comes in and out and is responsible for killing any sort of rat that gets underneath their house. Mm-hmm. And we decided, okay, we're going to stay over at their house a couple of nights ago. And what happened was, as we were getting ready, I set the alarm on our house.
Okay.
And the alarm is one of those alarms. It's a motion sensor alarm. Me being an idiot, I forgot that we were leaving our cats overnight in our house while setting the motion sensor alarm.
And hey, so, spoiler alert, cats don't sit still. This is kind of like their brand is just chaos, especially when the lights are out.
Recognize that around a solid 1 o'clock in the morning. We basically had to leave Laura's parents' house, which is like a 15-minute drive away over here, and drive home. We came home. The light out in front of our house was like blinking to say the alarm had gone off. The cats were hiding underneath the bed. Just absolute terror. Luckily, like the alarm wasn't going off, but it seems very clear that the alarm like had gone off at some point.
Well, the flash of the light means like the panic room with Jodie Foster is like going off. Like somebody's trapped. They need to get out. Like that's the Morse code. You're trying to like alert the authorities.
So yesterday when I recorded with Dave Dufour, I think I was recording just on like pure adrenaline and was like good. And you get the crash today, Penny. You get the energy dip. We are not buying the dip. We are not going crypto here. We are essentially dying inside.
That's great. That reminds me of I had a friend in high school and we had to do presentations, AP English or something like that. And he did the presentation but forgot his note cards at home. So when he went to present,
he
remembered the beginning, and then the question and answer section, he was supposed to take questions from the class, and he took a question, and no matter what the person said, he'd say, like, that's absolutely right. So maybe that's what happens today when you start asking me my opinion on Caleb Love versus Kenny Chandler. Yes, it's good. What else you got? Yeah,
that's correct. This is right. So today we have not talked about what the subject of the podcast is today. We are talking about lead guards and particularly lead guards in the 2022 NBA draft. Now, this class has been pretty maligned, I would say. And we're probably not going to, like, stop that from happening. Like, we're going to evaluate them and discuss them. And I think that it's an interesting class, but I don't think it's a particularly good class. Much like the quarterback class in the 2022 NFL draft, I believe this is actually a pretty weak 2022 crop of lead guards, depending on where you classify Jaden Ivey. Now, right, we're going to talk about that for a little bit, and then we're going to do our typical mailbag section. And then we're also going to do our prospects of the week. So that'll be the order of operations here. But let's start with the point guards here, Penny. Where are you on this lead guard class? Are you kind of in the same boat that I am?
Yeah, I'm really in the same boat. And I've watched enough of all these guys. And it seems like there's just kind of two large clusters, like first round-ish and then second round-ish and a mixed bag. I've waited for somebody to kind of like make the leap, and I don't classify Jaden Ivey as a lead guard, and that's a hill that you're dying on, and that's okay. I have many other hills that I die on. So removing him from that, I don't necessarily know who like the lead guy is for me. There's been guys who have shown moments, but there hasn't been like a really full body work, and even to the point where I started today and looking to see who are 2022 NBA free agent guards and where do they kind of stack up against the current class? Because I think that'll kind of come into consideration with teams when they're willing to invest a 3 to 4 year kind of guaranteed deal versus who can I get on the open market for maybe better value, maybe fewer years and are ready to play right away.
Yeah. I've talked to a lot of scouts over the course of the last week and a half trying to get a handle on this draft class in general. And what our discussion points are right now, I think, is that mostly we see this class as having some real potential and upside, but sure, there are fewer sure things mm-hmm. right now in this class. Like most years, I feel like we have a pretty good handle on, like, I don't know, 15 first round picks, something like that. Like, what would you say? 15 to 20 first round picks? Like, we have
generally.
I'm not saying like guarantee, maybe 20 guys who definitely go in the top 40, I would say, right?
Yeah, very fair.
Right now, I don't think we have that. I would say we have like 12, something like that. And then, like, outside of that top four, top five group, I mean, like, look, like we talked about Jaden Hardy last week. Jaden Hardy has not been very good so far for the G League Ignite, and we've kind of discussed that, and we're not going to talk about him today, but like most people have Jaden Hardy right now, what, top 10?
Top 10, yeah.
I don't think it's like a guaranteed deal he goes in the first round, do you?
First round, I'd say probably yes, and he's played better the last couple games. He's up to like 20 points per game in that last stretch. He's shooting like 38% from the field and 33% from three. I still have the same concerns I had before, though. I mean, he put together a couple of good games. You can't just write off all the other ones. Right. There's enough people, I think, that would take a flyer on him based on his high school tape and history, but not, you know, I think he's kind of trending the other way as opposed to like the top seven and going upward.
Yeah, like, I guess I would say, like, I think there's probably, like, an 80% chance that he goes in the first round. But, like, I can't sit here right now and tell you that, like, the wheels don't fall off. And sure, that this goes the other way with Jaden Hardy, I guess. And, like, last year, like, I felt good. Jonathan Kuminga is going to go in the first round, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Jalen Green's going to go somewhere in that first round area. Then again, though, like, there are guys that I felt good about. No, you know what, though? Like, even B.J. Boston at this point, like, was not a guaranteed deal last year that he would go in the first round, even though he's looked really good so far for the Clippers and the Agua Caliente. Now, let's move to the lead guards of it all now. And I don't know that – look, I would say that J.D. Davison probably goes in the first round, right? Yeah. Like, I would say that, like, he is probably the one I feel best about. He and maybe Kennedy Chandler, like, I feel best about at the moment.
Ty-Ty.
I feel good about Ty-Ty, but yeah. Again, like, if we're not calling Jaden Ivey a point guard, why are we calling Ty-Ty a point guard?
Fair. I mean, he's playing alongside Sevier Wehler. Fair.
It's
hard because even and we won't deep dive right this moment, but even like Caleb Love is playing with RJ Davis, so like where do you kind of put him right. Too? He's like shooting more, or less facilitating. So where is he? Is he technically a lead guard?
Yeah, so I consider Jaden Ivey a lead guard. I think that the team that gives Jaden Ivey the ball, or the team that drafts Jaden Ivey, will give him the ball. Right now. You disagree with that, and I think that that's, like, reasonable. Like, I think there is some space for him to play off guard. Like, I would not be surprised if they want to play him next to a point guard in his career. Like, that would be totally reasonable to me. Let's remove Ivy from this discussion, in part because we just talked about him last week. Like, if you want to see – you want to hear the Jaden Ivy deep dive – you can do that on last week's episode with Penny. You can also watch us talk about it. I literally pulled the Jaden Ivey clip and put it up on YouTube. So if you want to watch us talk about it, you can do that. Go subscribe to the YouTube channel.
There it is.
Game Theory Podcast over on YouTube.
Subscribe. Watch the video. Get the views up.
Yes, please. So who is the guy right now in this class that you would say is the top lead guard that you feel best about?
Ooh, Lordy. That is really tough. That is really tough. For right now, if we're kind of saying like we're investing more in all the buzzy words, if we're investing in upside right now, I guess I would have to say J.D. Davidson. I don't feel great about it. It's not like a completely definitive statement. I like for him the ability for him to get paint touches at such a high frequency, which opens up everything else on the floor for him, for his teammates. He's very fast with the ball in his hands. He can make game-changing plays in the last 30 seconds of games, like that game against Houston. He had that huge tip dunk. He had the goaltend that wasn't a goaltend. That's another story for another day. But without hesitation, that's like the type of level of athlete that he can be on the basketball court. Now, that said, he has to find a way to stay fast while slowing down mentally and keeping his processing high. There was a drive early in that Houston game where he beat his man. He kind of like tapped on the brakes prematurely, then passed opposite, ended up being a turnover. And then some more stuff just out of pick and roll. I didn't like a lot of the decisions he made against Gonzaga early. The first one, he like pump faked and traveled. The next one, he like kind of sort of tried to feed the post. And the third one's a nicely placed alley-oop for Charles Bediako. The jumper, when he's wide open, sometimes looks really good, looks fluid, looks clean. Other times in his head, he just pauses for a second, he doesn't get it off, and you don't know kind of where he's at mentally with his jumper. And alongside, and this is a common theme for all the guys we're going to talk about, when I watch Alabama, I feel more comfortable right now, though, with Javon Quinterly with the ball in his hand and him kind of like being the initiator. And then when JD can be on the second side and then it gets late in the shot clock and he can make one of these crazy plays against a shifting defense – I just get nervous when J.D. Davidson kind of like gets moving too much. I see the gifts. I see the talent. It's just there's still work to be done in order for him to kind of be solidified in that lottery-ish type range for me.
So I'd have J.D. Davidson number two right now among this group, and it won't surprise anyone who is number one if you've been listening to the show for a while, but at least throughout the 2022 process so far. But the thing that worries me with JD is I don't know how he's going to score right now at the next level.
Yep.
I don't think he is a particularly comfortable driver. Anytime, like, you go back and you watch the Gonzaga game, basically any time that Chet Holmgren rotated over from the weak side, JD Davison just, like, decided to turn away from
it. It's not a bad decision, like, though. Like, that, no. That one's a business decision. I don't know if we can count
it's
Chet.
Smart because
choice. I turn away, too. Who's actually, maybe, like, Jaden Ivey will turn the corner and say, like, yeah, it's coming, buddy. Like, here, we're going to try to dunk on you right now. A lot of guys would pass that out. I totally agree with your point. It's just tough with Chet.
Right, but I use that as an example, right? Because Chet is as big as other NBA centers,
sure.
Right? Like, this is the real size issue here. I don't trust JD Davison as a pull-up three-point shooter. Do you?
No, I don't. I don't know if he does necessarily that either. Like, some guys are really confident.
No, I agree
they're gonna shoot
that.
15 times no matter what. Like, he doesn't have that. I think he had 6 points last night. 10 assists. He was trying to distribute more, but I don't think he was really necessarily looking to shoot off the dribble either.
Yeah, and then I think he's much better as a distributor. He's a pretty good distributor out of ball screens right now. He's actually he's a really good distributor out of ball screens, I would say. The turnovers are an issue. Like, whenever he gets into the lane, and he gets deep into the lane, it looks like that little processing ability that you said that he needs to have.
Yeah.
It looks like it short circuits a little bit.
It does.
Yeah. Whenever he gets farther and farther into the lane, like, he's good at hitting a kick out shooter from the elbow, right? Like, he'll hit that, like, cross corner kick because Alabama's so good at, like, teaching those guards, I think, to look for that pass, right? He's a really great athlete. He is someone who really gets out in transition. I think he actually, like, drives transition play, like, in some respect. He is, like, a really athletic guard, for sure, who can do that. But he turns the ball over in crowds. He isn't really a scoring threat in or outside of transition right now, or outside of being a spot shooter. Like, I would imagine that he's averaging, what, like, 9.5 points right now? Probably three of those per game.
Yeah, 9.6.
Yeah, three of those per game come off of a spot three. And then, what do we think? Three more of those per game come out in transition. Maybe he gets like a bucket and a half in transition a game.
Yeah, and the transition thing is weird too, because defensively, he's pretty lax away from the ball. He seems disinterested a lot of times.
Oh, totally.
When he is active, he'll dive in passing lanes because he wants to get on transition, like you said. But when he's misses on that, he's out of the play, then it's 5-on-4. So it's like, I like the thought of him diving in and being a disruptor, but I also don't want him totally diving out of plays and gambling and giving your team a disadvantage down the other end. At the same time, we're saying he's the best when he's scoring in transition. Like, that's how he goes out and does it. So what's the balance there of, you want him to run, you want him to get steals, you want him to pressure the ball, but I also don't want him away from the ball, standing straight up and kind of looking lost in space and being beat for back doors too.
Yeah, no, I would prefer that he stays solid on defense. Like,
right.
I know that there's room to gamble, and I think there is, like, a middle ground for it, but I would prefer that he stays more solid in defense, and he's not there yet right now.
Yeah.
Look, I've just spent now, like, probably 4 minutes, like, shitting on JD Davison. Like, he's an incredible athlete. And I think he is, like, a very real pick-and-roll passer. But, like, to me, this is not a top-10 pick based off of what we've seen so far.
No, I don't think so either. I don't.
I feel like anywhere that I look around the internet, like, outside of myself and outside of you, that's where I see him. Like, that's where I see him ranked. Like, I feel like people are looking at, oh, he's shooting 56% from the field and 36% from three, and he has 5 assists per game and 5 rebounds because he's a great athlete. And, you know, we can extrapolate that if he wasn't next to Javon Quinterly, that he could have a higher usage rate and, like, could average 15 and 7 per game. But I just don't know that I see that based off of what I've seen on tape so far. And that's concerning to me. Like, to me, like, he looks like a good late first round pick flyer right now.
Yeah, I currently have him 26. It's probably too low, and he has played better than that. I've kind of moved the top 15-ish guys around. But just, like, scrolling through the names, again, of free agents, I don't know where a lot of these guys fall in the Goran Dragic, Elfrid Payton.
That's a good name. Like, there's kind of a lot of Elfrid Payton there.
Right. I mean, look what you got yourself into now. There is some of that stuff there. It's actually a good comp, kind of like by accident. But those are like the actual A to B decisions that teams are going to have to make. Do you believe in Elfrid Payton? You kind of went through this experiment. Or are you willing to do it with J.U. Davidson because you think there's more there to him?
Yeah, like he is a project. Like it's going to take J.D. Davidson some time to work through parts of his game. And I don't know. J.D. Davidson's a better shooter than Elfrid Payton is. I will say that. Like, I think there's a world where J.D. Davidson, like, shoots out-of-spot situations consistently from the NBA line. Like, everything right now in college is from the college line as well. Like, there's not really any NBA range there either. And I'm a little bit more worried. I'm a little bit more tentative on J.D. Davidson, I guess.
I will say this, too. We talked about this, I think, kind of on our guard preview, is that he's from a very small town. He hasn't played a ton of high-level basketball. Didn't play a ton of high-level high school basketball. This may also be a kid who just needs time and more reps, and he's never been told to process it because he's always been the fastest or the biggest jumper or the biggest scorer and can get on transition. And those gambles have always worked, and now he's got to readjust, recalibrate to what it looks like in college, and he'll have to do the same thing for the pro. So I also don't want to completely write him off because it's early. It's young in his career, and this is a new level of basketball for him.
Yeah, no, I think that you're 100% right. And I'll be honest, like I think the shooting off of the catch is a little bit ahead of where I thought it was. I don't see him anywhere near being ready yet off the bounce. And I don't really love the way that he processes once he gets 2 feet in the paint. And then the defense, like you said, is not necessarily awesome. So to me, like this is a phenomenal elite level athlete, even by NBA standards in terms of explosiveness, in my opinion, that is going to take some time. And to me, like that guy is worth a late first round pick flyer. Now, it's funny, the antithesis of him in many ways is Kennedy Chandler, right? A guy that does not have elite physical tools, but has a lot of the skill level that evaluators hope for. He certainly has the role that evaluators would love to see him in at Tennessee, where he does have the ball in his hands throughout most of the game, at least has the opportunity to have the ball in his hands throughout most of the game. And again, I mean, the same issues that we brought up with Kennedy Chandler in the preseason, I think continue to cause me pause, or to give me pause, I guess. It's hard to be a 6 foot, 165 pound guard in the NBA. And we've seen some flashes of difficulty for Kennedy Chandler thus far, adjusting to the size difference of players in college basketball.
Yeah, he's a blur. He's very fast with the ball in his hands. And He's quick most of the game. He gets on the break. If he gets a step in transition, like, he's beating you. I'm similar to you, where he had that game statistically, if you look at the box score against Colorado, and people said, see, here's the game. I actually felt worse about that game because I wasn't sold on that type of finishing working in college as it would against the NBA. The rotating big, and no disrespect to him at all, was Evan Batty, who's 6'8", 260. You're not having, like, that size of big rotating to help. It's 7 foot. With the 7'7" wingspan. I will say he's a high percentage operator at pick and roll. He works on that well, and if guys go under, he's going to shoot. I don't really believe in the shot. I think there's a lot of God hand. People have pointed to other things saying it's going to work. It could get there. He worked on it all summer to improve. And then I'll give him credit for having stones too. Like the second half versus Colorado.
Oh, totally.
It was a back and forth game. There's around the 8 minute mark. He calls his own number. He scores through contact. Like he's not afraid. He's not going to shy from the big moment. The other one I want to point out is he had a really rough game against Texas Tech, which was a very tough basketball game to watch. But he was 4 for 13. He was 1 for 5 from three. He had 5 assists, 5 turnovers. And the UNC Greensboro game I watched, they're very physical with him, and they picked him up full court. They made sure he didn't get any easy looks. He was 2 for 9. The size and strength, and that's going to become the scout now when you get into conference play, how he adapts and works to that could be a little bit telling on what it's going to look like in the NBA as well.
So the two best defenses that Kennedy Chandler has played so far, we would say are Villanova and Texas Tech, right?
Yes. And I was at the Villanova game.
Yeah, Texas Tech, he goes 4 for 13 from the field, 5 turnovers versus 5 assists, 9 points, 4 fouls. I think he had a couple late, like when they were kind of trying to like get back in the game.
Yeah, kind of free throw
line. Like, yeah, like I don't know that the fouls thing matters as much. Versus Villanova, 1 for 9, 2 assists, 3 turnovers, 6 points.
He was bad. Yeah, he was bad. Santiago Vescovi like those kept are, the game a little bit. It wasn't him.
Yeah, like those are the two games that I think evaluators, along with the UNC game, because there were certainly a lot of scouts at the UNC game because that was the Hall of Fame tip-off event, mm-hmm. and he went 6 of 13 with 8 assists and 2 turnovers for 14 points, went 4 of 10 in the lane, though, again, against size, or from two-point range, and that's, again, against size that he will actually play in the NBA, because UNC has guys like Dawson Garcia and Armando Bacot. You kind of go through his game log, and the games where he's had success in the paint, one of them was the Colorado game where he went 12 for 14 from two-point range, and he just drove, and Colorado had no idea what they were doing defending him, essentially.
Right.
It was kind of ridiculous. like Tennessee Tech, 5 for 9 from 2-point range. Presbyterian, 6 for 10 from 2-point range. ETSU, 4 for 6 from 2-point range. Like, these are all terrible teams. And whenever I've seen Kennedy Chandler now play against teams that I think have like real NBA level size, it's kind of in the back of my mind where I am a little bit worried. I'm a little bit worried about where we're at this point.
So where, as a collective kind of draft community then, do you think all of this Kennedy Chandler lottery top 10 talk has come from? You and I are pretty aligned.
Yeah.
I do want to say also, despite his size, he is a good defender. He averages 2.3 steals per game. He does average 0.6 blocks, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a lot for his size. He does that like Cole Anthony, weak side, crank up, try to block at the rim, or jump shooter. So he does have that in his defensive toolbox. But where is the top 10 stuff coming from? What am I missing when I watch? What do I have to watch differently?
Yeah, I mean, look, like, I don't really see it either. I have him more in the 20 range as well. I think that it's probably coming from the same people that had Sharif Cooper last year.
Fair.
As a top five, top, you know, seven guy in the class. And just don't really account for how difficult it is to be a high-level scorer. Like, is Kennedy Chandler better, or how difficult it is to be a high-level scorer at that size? I should finish that statement. In the NBA. Like, is Kennedy Chandler a better prospect than Sharif Cooper? That's what I keep coming back to.
Like, I would still take Sharif Cooper. And Sharif Cooper, you look at his G League stats, he's putting up legitimate numbers. And G League's not real life. Summer League's not real life. I went back today just for kind of context of Franz Wagner in the Summer League, averaged 8 points per game, wasn't great. In his last 12, he's been a top three rookie in the NBA. So Summer League's not real. G League's not real. There are some indicators there.
Yeah,
I'm also in Boston. I've seen Tremont Waters play really well in the G League at that type of size, but it's still like a level up. Like, it's still a next step to that place. I'm more pro Sharif Cooper if you said take one or the other right now.
I think I am too. And I will say Kennedy has the advantage, I think, of being a better shooter than Sharif Cooper is. And I think that NBA teams will probably buy that part of his skill set a little bit more. But, like,
this is such a depressing podcast. We need to interject some energy here. I don't know if we take a 5-hour energy in the middle here or what we have to do, but we need some positivity.
You literally just watched me drink coffee. I can't
drink my amino acids on the air because I have to go to the bathroom and we're going to record for another hour because I know how these things go. There's some prospect out there. There's a guard prospect out there. I love Jaden Ivey. We've said that. He's not a point guard, but I love Jaden Ivey. There's somebody here who's still going to surprise us too. There's still going to be somebody comes out of this grouping that's better than we thought. I don't know if it's either one of those two guys, but there's still some good things here.
Right. And like I should say, like I think Kennedy Chandler probably shoots 35% from three in the NBA at some point. Like I think that like, look, he's shooting 40% right now. Like I think that that's where it comes from, right? He's averaging 15 points and 5 assists per game while shooting 47% from the field and 40% from three.
Yep.
Those are really good numbers for a freshman. And I think that evaluators who look at the box score numbers extensively and then also just like watch the highlight flashes of Kennedy Chandler, those moments are really strong.
Right.
Like those are like genuinely really fun moments. You go back and you watch that Colorado game, like there is a lot there. It's just that when you watch teams that know how to like actually defend, I mean, it hasn't been as good. It hasn't been terrible. He's a first round pick, I think. Like I would take him right around the 20s, just like I would have taken, I had Sharif Cooper ranked like somewhere like in the early 20s.
Yeah,
but
right.
I just struggle with the, like the size is a real issue. It's, mm-hmm. it's a significant, substantial issue once you get to the NBA.
All right, so I'm going to shift to who I think is your favorite guy, and correct me if I'm wrong. Would that be Ty Washington from Kentucky?
You know me all too well. Like I well, do enjoy.
Well, I want to start low and build ourselves up. The reason I bring him up to start is he is playing better. He is shooting the ball better. He's in the 89th percentile in catch and shoot per synergy. He does that two man game. The pull up stuff is there to be the Debbie Downer. After that Duke game, they played Robert Morris. Kentucky played Robert Morris, Mount St. Mary's, Ohio, Albany, North Florida, Central Michigan, Southern, and he has this run, and people are pointing and adding me and us on Twitter and saying, see, you dummy, he's good. You blew it. And then they played Notre Dame. He was 3-for-7, and I'm like, where are we at? Like, how do I evaluate this now? We're going to get plenty of SEC games coming up. Unfortunately, the Ohio State game is canceled. I think that would have been a good one defensively and see how he kind of adjusted to things. But how do we take what he did non-conference and kind of the stinker he had against Duke and then not as great either as Notre Dame. I don't know if he even scored in the second half. How do we figure out who this guy really is?
So I didn't hate the Notre Dame game. I will say that. Like, I would have liked to have seen him more active in the second half. But I thought that the bigger problem there was that Kentucky just in general seems to not have a real, like, cogent plan on offense. Their plan seems to be involving, like, Severe Wheeler jacking bad shots and like Keon Brooks making decisions to like shoot 18-foot mid-range shots. Like those are the shots that they're generating, and I am baffled by it in a lot of ways. This is like the concern I had about them taking Severe Wheeler. Like all of the Severe Wheeler concerns bore themselves out on the court against Notre Dame whenever he's the one running the show as opposed to Ty Washington at the end of this game. And I understand why there is a hesitancy based off of quality of competition with Ty after we saw the bad Duke game where Trevor Keels like just completely
locked
shut him
up.
Down.
Yeah.
Right?
Keels Island.
And yeah, Keels did a phenomenal job on Ty. Now, here's what I will say. Ty is a high-level shooter. That's all translated so far, right? Like, he's shooting 38% from three. He's a good mid-range shooter, and he's shooting 80-plus percent from the foul line. We believe in the jumper with Ty, right?
Yeah, I do. Certainly the mid-range, and we're shooting 38% from three. And once you balance it out, it's even higher after that bad Duke game. So, yes, still with you.
He's playing essentially as a two-man and has like a 2-to-1 assist turnover ratio.
Mm-hmm.
He's averaging 3.5 assists per game, something like that. And in the moments where he gets a chance to make plays, like there's real vision there, right? Like we've seen quite a bit. And on top of it, he's 6'3" with like a 6'9" wingspan, 6'10" wingspan, something like that. He has real positional size. He has real positional length. He has real change of pace ability off the bounce. Like, I don't think he's quite as good of a ball handler as Kennedy Chandler and as JD. He's probably pretty close to JD Davison in terms of like technical craft, ball handling ability wise. He's probably a little bit better, to be honest. JD's just like a lightning athlete and is like crazy out of ball screens.
Right.
with his ability to get downhill. But Ty, in terms of like technical craft, probably a level below Kennedy Chandler. But he's so much bigger and longer and stronger that he just has a real marginal advantage in those moments that Kennedy just doesn't have that like ability to fall back on because of the size. I think he's a better finisher at the basket. I love the way he processes the game. I do think he, like, look, if we're calling Jaden Ivey a point guard, or if we're calling Jaden Ivey a two guard, like, there's no way we should be calling Ty a point guard either. Like, yeah. They're the same to me positionally. Like, they might play some point, they might play some off ball. We'll see. But I think they're both points at the end of the day. Like, personally, I think they're both going to play a lot of one. And I really have seen nothing from Ty out, or since that Duke game at least, that gives me cause for concern. The Duke game was a worry, but he looks pretty good outside of that. Like, I think he's been great. And then on top of it, like, lest we forget, the track record of Kentucky guards outperforming their collegiate,
yes, trust the, like, data
production is pretty high. Like, we've now got Emmanuel Quickley, who was great in college, but, like, you know, a guy that we did not have a huge, like, positive expectation of success in the NBA. Tyrese Maxey certainly has outperformed his college production. Keldon Johnson, has outperformed his collegiate production. Tyler Hero looks great so far for the Miami Heat. The list goes back and on and on and on, especially, though, over the last few years since they seem to have been in this little miniature rut that has occurred. Yeah, I mean, I think that part of this is scheme, and I think that part of it is that Ty's very good, and I feel good about what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I'm looking ahead kind of now at their schedule with that game canceled. I don't know if they're make it up or whatever, but a good one to circle.
So like the hope, according to reports at least, is that maybe they play North Carolina, because UCLA has like Mick Cronin just sat out his game last night, and I think they canceled the Alabama State game, right?
They did. Yeah.
Yeah. So like maybe they play North Carolina, and then looks like CBS. Because
you'd have Caleb Love versus Ty, and the point I was going to make is January 15th, you have Tennessee at Kentucky, so then you have Kennedy Chandler against Ty Washington, so that they'll at least be able to play it out and play each other, where you're probably not going to see them against each other in draft workouts. This is as close as we're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm intrigued by all of this. I don't know what to do with all of these lead guards. I will say I do have Ty still as like a top 15 guy. Like, he's the guy that I feel most confident in right now. I would probably have him more like 10, if we're being honest, but I would conservatively say top 15 without having like recently put together a big board. Yeah. I mean, what other names do we have here? I sent you a big list last night.
We should touch on Caleb Love as we kind of transition to North Carolina here, because Caleb Love did not have a good freshman year. I don't think I'm breaking any news here. He was 32% from the field, 27% from three. He's now 44.
Well, I can put it in context. Caleb Love had a historically inefficient, like, bad freshman year. Like, let's not sugarcoat it, right? Like, it
was not. I'm the sugarcoat guy. This is my full time gig. I gotta throw some sugar on it. I coat it up well. But look, I'll give the guy his due. He's shooting 10% better from the field. He's shooting 16% better from three. He's knocked down a turnover per game. I have the same hesitations, I guess, that he splits lead guard responsibilities with RJ Davis. And for my view, he's at his best when he's playing that second role and not the primary offensive initiator. He lets the game develop a little bit more. He's not taking the first look that he has. Most of his shots are off like third and fourth options after those initial reads aren't there. And from three, the numbers, I mean, was 4-for-7 against Michigan, 3-for-5 against Georgia Tech, 4-for-7 against Elon, 2-for-5 last game against Furman, 96th percentile in all jump shots, 99th percentile in catch and shoot. Again, on synergy, North Carolina needs him to be good, and he's good. They're 6-1 when he takes at least 10 shots, and he's shooting, but it's not as rushed. It's not as hurried. Sometimes when I was watching the first year, it was like he was trying to get out of Chapel Hill as soon as possible, and he was showing that on the court. It's like he's going a million miles per hour, like, get me to the rim, get me transition, get me out of the locker room. He still does that a little bit where he goes so fast that he doesn't use his speed to his advantage, but it's better, and his defense has been also pretty solid too.
No, I agree with all that. Like, I look, this is the area we're going to get a little bit more positive in, because I think part of what we're evaluating against is like comparison to expectation, right? Yeah. Caleb Love's been good. Like, I think he's actually been really good, if we're being honest. Like, I think the community is drastically underrating the potential that Caleb Love could go late in the first round. I have been remarkably impressed with the jump shooting. I remember particularly, like, you didn't even bring this game up, but the game I was most impressed with Caleb Love was the Charleston game, where in the second half, he just completely took that thing over. Like, out of ball screens, attacking. He made a couple of threes late in that game. Drew a ton of fouls. Like, it was really, really impressive. They needed him to step up in that second half, and he just like completely dominated and took it over. In terms of the defense, I agree with you. He's active defensively. I do worry a little bit about, like, is he going to be a plus defender? Is he going to be an average defender in the NBA? He has enough activity level to where I think he'll be playable defensively in the NBA. The jumper, I have full faith in. I love the way he's processing and making decisions now. I think that as a secondary ball handler with a little bit less on his plate, you're right. He looks a lot better. I think that, like, there's real twitch there in terms of his ability to separate from opposing players. I have Caleb Love as like a top 40, top 45 guy right now. Yeah, I've been in. Look, Well, no, like last year I was like, oh no, like this is not like within a month and a half. I was like, oh no, this is not a real prospect. Like,
no, I meant more this draft cycle, because last year I was very high on him coming out of USA Basketball and coming out of a huge summer. I thought it was not a no-brainer, but a top 15-ish kid. And then after a few games, it was like, man, was I off. So if you completely eliminate and delete last season, it's more of the expectation level that I had and probably you had. I had him at 47 to start the year, because I felt that was kind of just like a mid-range-ish type place to put him. He's moved up. I don't know how high. Certainly there in those last kind of spots in the first round. And if he shoots this way, like he's only going to build more fans and maybe potentially even leapfrog some of the guys we talked about earlier.
Yeah, there's some real, like, dribble-pass-shoot, like, skill there. Like, he's a very skilled, very talented player last year. Like, whereas last year I was like, oh, this is just an inefficient gunner. The game has slowed down now. He's making better decisions. I'm a lot more impressed with Caleb Love than I thought I would be. I do think he's a pro after this year. Like,
He'll play pro
at
somewhere.
This point.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he'll be at the very least a two-way, and I think probably, like, I think there's a real chance he's on a guarantee next
year. Yeah, he's playing himself into guaranteed money. Now, guaranteed could mean top 40 somewhere, right? Like, guys get guaranteed deals at 42 and 39. Like, there's that outcome, too. You're not saying he's going to go 22nd. Maybe, but it's like that's how wide the variability is right now.
Right, and I will say this, too. Like, the upside here is bench scorer, is what we think, right?
Yes, bench scorer can make some shots, sort of that. Like
Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah. Poor man's Maxi a little bit, but making shots off the bench, but somewhere in that area.
Yeah. So to me, that's a second round pick, given that you're going to have to put probably a couple years in before he's like ready to do that. But I do think he'll do that. Like, I think Caleb Love's going to play in the NBA for a little while now is where I'm at. Yep. Like, I feel pretty good about it. Okay. Let's take a quick commercial break. Because this next group,
the lightning round.
Yeah, we'll be doing some lightning round. There's one guy maybe that I want to talk about a little bit more, but there's going to be some lightning round. Okay. Should we talk about Andrew Nembhard real quick?
Yeah, we can. We can. I like to talk Nembhard because what was the Gonzaga game that they came off whenever? Oh, UCLA. Everyone said he's the was it UCLA? Yeah, it was UCLA. Everyone said he's their first-round pick.
Where he's the best point guard.
Best guard of the country. The best guard of the country, national player of the year, number one pick. So that's ambitious for the Zags, but hey, maybe take your shot. Post that, he had 6 points and six turnovers versus Duke. He had 9.3 rebounds versus Tarleton State. 4 points, three turnovers versus Alabama, and 2 points versus Merrimack. I don't think he's the best guard in the country, which people are yelling at us about. And the numbers that I kind of worry about is the shooting, too. It's 26.5% from three. It's been 0 for 11 in his last four games. I like Andrew Nembhard. I think he's very steady, but these kind of last stretch here makes me kind of pause a little and say I personally was overrating him more so than he should have been at the time.
Yeah, I don't really see it with him as a like get in the NBA draft, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the way to put it, right? Like, I love his feel out of ball screens. I love his passing ability. I love the way that he can dictate play in transition, but I'm not quite there with Nembhard in terms of being able to consistently be a scoring threat in the NBA, because he's not a crazy athlete that can get into the lane and finish. He's not like, doesn't really have an in-between game, not a three-point shooter. I just think it's going to be a little bit tough for him to score at the next level at a substantial enough clip to make it happen for him, but I'm intrigued. By the way, like, the guy that we didn't talk about in this like big thing is Jean Montero, right? Like, I do want to note that.
Yeah.
We talked about Montero last week. We do consider him a lead guard, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We're focusing on college guys today. And Montero is a first-round pick in some respect. I feel similarly, maybe a little bit higher on him than Kennedy Chandler. But I'm intrigued by Jean Montero. It's just we're focusing on college players here today.
Yeah, that's good. Still some concerns that his size is kind of like a scorer at 6'2", and has passed it better, but there's similar red flags.
Okay. Let's go lightning round through guys that I think are interesting second round picks.
Yeah.
Okay, Iverson Molinar. You are up.
Pass. Iverson Molinar. Okay, so Iverson Molinar, here's my notes. His points are consistent, 16-ish a game. His assists have almost doubled from the previous season. His three-point percentage is way down to 27% after shooting 44% as a sophomore and 37% as a freshman. He did go 2-for-11 and 1-for-7 in consecutive games, which with such a small sample, that can torpedo your percentages for sure. He is a very good pick-and-roll ball handler. Doesn't really make any rash decisions. He's fine resetting it if it doesn't see what he likes and pulls it off and getting the offense back the way it should be, or can use that kind of quick first step, change of pace to create space and go on his own. Finishes well around the basket, can iso aside to self-create for a look when needed to, and the defense really collapses on him when he drives, which opens up some look for others. I've talked to some NBA scouts who I wouldn't say necessarily have a first-round grade on him, but a guy that they're following because there has been enough that he's shown that they're intrigued.
Yeah, I think that he is the best of this group. I think there's a non-zero chance he goes in the first round. I do see him more as like an early second round guy.
Yeah.
The big leap for him this year has been passing and playmaking. He was a pure scorer last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was I'm going out, I'm trying to get mine. Like, that was his role. And so far this year, he's dictating out of ball screens. He's playing a lot better as a distributor. I think he has like 5 assists versus 1.5 turnovers per game. Something like that?
Yeah.
Do you have the numbers in front of you?
I don't. Just my note, ironically, I deleted it before you started talking, was he's finding that next guy better than he has been.
Yeah, definitely. And especially out of ball screens, too. Like, that's the thing for me. That was the thing that was missing. Like, you mentioned the 27% mark from three. I am not worried about the shooting at all.
No,
I think he's missed, like, one free throw this year, something like that. Like, and he gets to the line like 4 or 5 times a game, and I think he's missed one or two free throws the entire year. So I'm not all that worried about the shooting. I think he can shoot. The passing is a really big leap for him. It would not surprise me if Iverson Molinar does spike up the board a little bit throughout SEC play as the percentages start to increase.
Yeah.
And as the passing hopefully stays in the same ballpark as what it's been thus far. Okay. Where do we want to go next? Let's go Boogie Ellis.
Boogie. Okay.
Give me some Boogie Ellis.
He's a player that Memphis could use right now because they need a point guard despite coming off a big win this week. Why can't we get guys like that?
Oh no, don't do him.
He's been good. He's been good, not great. USC's 11-0, and him and probably Isaiah Mosley just deserve a warrant, a mention, because they haven't lost yet. They're in the Pac-12. He personally started hot. He had 5 straight double figure games. He's been in single digits the last 4. I recommend him going back to school. Not quite there yet. Just consistency is the thing that he needs to work on.
Yeah. You know, very, very interesting because I really like the defensive intensity with him. That's kind of what he's brought this year. And he's always been someone who played hard defensively, but I think that like he's almost setting the tone a little bit defensively this year for USC in a way that like is slightly different than in the past. I've always really liked him as a scorer. He's always struck me as like bench scorer who gets hot and like comes in and plays hard. I think that's probably what he is if it works at the next level. I think second round though, for sure. Like I would be surprised if Boogie Ellis jumps into the first round range, wouldn't you?
This year for sure. If he goes back and adds on this and does it year three, if the other Mobley brother leaves and it's kind of like his team and his show and he shows leadership roles, especially scoring wise, it could happen. Not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. Okay. Here. Let's see. We've got Grant Sherfield.
I have some takes. I have all the takes. Grant Sherfield, 27-5, shooting 47, 39-86. Nevada has won 4 straight after starting the year 1-4. Volume guy. We're also in a little bit of the mold, the grouping of volume shooters. 15 shots per game. Finishes well by the rim. I do like his handle. He passes it well, despite when you see a guard scoring 20 points per game, you think, oh, maybe he's a pig. Like he'll actually keep his eyes up and look for shooters and look for cutters. There's parts on the tape that aren't great. He does turn it over a lot. He panics sometimes with double teams, with pressure. Kind of searches for foul calls. He's allowed that offensive freedom to really do whatever he wants at Nevada. If he reels it in, there are some tools there.
So Nevada, like 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, something in that range, they dismissed AJ Brahma from the program. He was a big transfer get from Robert Morris. He averaged like 20 points and 8 rebounds per game. Since they booted or dismissed, let's go with AJ Brahma, Grant Sherfield has gone for 31 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 23 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 24 points, 8 rebounds, 10 assists, 28 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists in 4 straight games. I mean, if he does that, then he's probably an NBA player, I would say. Yeah.
He has all the keys to the van. He can go wherever he wants.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is, like, they're really letting him go.
Yes.
And they're letting him dictate everything now, as opposed to when Brahma was there and early in the season. It was a bit more of a shared, not just with Brahma, but, like, they were seemingly, like, kind of sharing the ball around a little bit more than what they have been in terms of letting him just be, like, the heliocentric offensive creator that they have needed. Now, how real is the passing ability? I think is like the key question for me. Like, is he a genuinely elite distributor like he's shown over the course of the previous 4 games? Or is he like merely a good distributor like he's been in the past? I think that that's kind of the critical question for me.
It is. And it's kind of a little bit difficult too, because when the usage is so high and you lose a guy that's scoring that many points and now the full offensive load's on there and you're allowed to play through mistakes because they generally just like need him to do that, it makes for a little bit of a tougher scout too.
Javon Freeman Liberty, who is putting up some bonkers numbers for DePaul right now.
His first 2 years at Valparaiso, transfers to DePaul. He's actually over, it's over 20 points per game. He averaged 19 points per game as a sophomore before he transferred. He's been a consistent 40% plus shooter all 4 years. His three-point percentage has made a jump this year up to 35%. He's a really good rebounder for his position at 8.3 per game. Probably more of a scorer than a true point guard for me. Like, when he catches the ball, he's looking to create for himself. He's looking to get some shots.
There's a lot of Ivy there in his game. It's more that than, like, true lead guard.
Yeah. Diet Coke version or something, but he turns the corner hard and pick and roll. He can score in the mid post. I don't love the jumper. He's feasted on some lower major teams. He struggled against Louisville. He's 2 for 15. He's taking 17 shots a game, and I think that number would actually be higher against Loyola. They played more conservatively because they were chasing, and they ended up losing that game. They're good, though. They're 9-1. They had one loss, was that four-point defeat to them. He turned 22 in October, so he has a couple things working against him. But when you're scoring 20 points per game, you can't just completely turn your head off to it either.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a Big East point guard averaging 21-8-4 right now. Like, that's going to get you on the draft radar in some respect. I have all of the same concerns you do in terms of shot selection, efficiency, everything, but I don't know. He's worth tracking as a definite, like, potential second round guy. I want to see what it looks like more in the Big East.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jamari Bouye at San Francisco.
Bouye, spin the wheel. Let's get down and find him. I love San Francisco. That's my first line. Head coach Todd Golden is a stud. They are 10-0. Bouye is also on his fifth season of college basketball, and you know what? God bless him. Stay in college forever. Average 20 points per game. Run pick and roll. He's great out of pick and roll. He's great in catch and shoot. He goes off the bounce comfortably with both hands. Very smooth with his left. Now he takes some wild ones. Takes some wild shots, some wild step backs here and there. He'll also be 23 on draft night. If he keeps shooting 55% from the field, 47 from three, 80 from the free throw line, he's also going to get another long look. And I don't want this to be a cop out, but this grouping is, like, really close for me. Like, we gave each other a list of, like, 8 to 10 names. There's no one that I feel, like, so much stronger about than the next name right now, but with the tape we have from this season.
Javon Quinterly.
Quinterly. All right, this is an interesting one. I didn't know if we were going to start with this once we did kind of our J.D. Davidson take. I like how he runs the team. He's also older. He's a 23-year-old junior. I don't love the three turnovers a game. He does balance it with about six assists. Gonzaga, he had four turnovers. Houston, three. Memphis was five. Despite those numbers and it looking bad, he does have a pretty tight handle with the ball. Sometimes he makes bad decisions, and you wish you could have it back as soon as
great
you release
handle,
it.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, and can get you a bucket or two, or at least a look late in the clock. When they're struggling, as late in the shot clock, he gets the ball and pulls it out, and he can beat his man and kick it, finish opposite with a little finger roll or jelly fam, if you will. I think there's a chance for him to kind of be a backup or play his way in through the G League. But with his age matched with, he's currently 26% from three, it makes that 43% from him anomalous the year before, but it's like kind of back to that 25% as a freshman. And if we're taking any teachings from the last draft, it's I think of Davion Mitchell with him, because Davion Mitchell had that season where the last season where he shot 40%, and now people are saying, I don't know if that was really like reality or he just like really shot the ball well, and we're back to where he is. So I like Javon. I also really like his story. A lot of people would have given up after the recruiting stuff and transfer from Villanova and just reinvented himself as a player. He took his medicine and now he's a leader on a team that just lost, but one of my favorite watches in the country right now too.
Yeah, really appreciate Nate Oates. Really appreciate that coaching staff. They do a great job of running a scheme that I think is very similar to what he'll be asked to run in the NBA. I'm not a huge Quinterly guy for the next level just because I don't know how he's going to hold up defensively. And the turnover issues are a pretty real concern, and now there are some actual shooting questions as well. So I get it. I think that he's definitely a, like, interesting summer league player.
Right.
And if he gets a two-way, I wouldn't be totally stunned. But yeah, I'm a little bit lower on Quinterly. Max Asemus. We're going to really buzz through some of these now.
No, it's good, though, because with Max, he led the nation scoring a year ago. His numbers are down. It's like 21 a game, not 25%. I'm sorry, 25 points per game. The shooting percentage is similar. You can tell he's not necessarily the same player without Kevin O'Banner, who transferred to Texas Tech. He was like tailor-made to play that two-man pick and roll with him. Or Robert spreads the floor well. For him to create, his shot looks a little bit quicker, a little bit cleaner. I still have my same issues. It's the kind of caught lightning in a bottle. I go back to the combine of him playing longer athletes and bigger guys on switches and struggling to shoot. So I have to shake that out of my head. It's more, can he get back at the combine and look better against bigger players across the floor? I know he had 38 points against Tulsa, hit the free throw line 15 times. It's just different on the pro level.
Yeah. He did not look very good in the G League combine, and he has not looked, or the NBA draft right. combine, I'm sorry. And he has not looked awesome to start this year. Tyson Etienne.
I just kind of have a couple quick notes on him. He was player of the year in the conference last year, right? Declared, came back.
Yeah, tied for it, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, three-point percentage down, 10%, despite that half-court pull-up he made to, like, start the year, and people thought this was going to be a thing. I like him. I don't really love him. It's not necessarily on my board right now.
Yeah, bottom end of the top 100 guy for me. Maybe a two-way guy. Like, that could work. But just shooting exceptionally inefficiently thus far. Very tough player. I think he's actually really creative with the ball. But, yeah, not quite for me at this point. Scottie Pippen Jr.?
I thought he had an okay combine last season. Vandy's not great. They lost three straight. Has an even assist to turnover ratio. I love his confidence. I love the bravado. He comes off screens firing. He resets the offense. He's the only real option that they have late. That's sort of where I'm at. Back end, second round. Wouldn't surprise he makes a team.
Yeah, maybe a two-way guy. Yep. Probably not a two-way get for me, but hasn't really taken like another step forward this year.
Right.
From what I have seen, it's just not as, you know, doesn't seem to be as crisp in terms of making plays for others. Doesn't seem to be quite as crisp in terms of getting separation, even despite the fact they haven't played as many good teams. Maybe there's something there that we don't know, but yeah, just not quite as exciting. I've gotten a couple Marcus Sasser questions here for the draft section. Do you have any strong Marcus Sasser thoughts?
Not overwhelmingly, but I do see the momentum building for people saying, like, put him in the first round. I'm not in that camp yet.
Wait, really?
A little bit. When you fall down the draft Twitter rabbit holes, you find some weird things in there. It's like the dark web. You gotta stay out. Once you get too far down, it's no crawling out of there. There are some deep Marcus Sasser fans. I like him. I haven't really, like, fallen in love with him yet like a lot of other people.
So I think the idea here is 45% three-point shooter so far on 8 attempts per game. And like a good defender at 6'1", 190 pounds. Look, I mean, that guy's maybe a bench guard if it works. Like if he keeps shooting 42 to 45% from three. I don't know. It's a really, really tough archetype, I think, to be in the NBA. Real potential second round pick, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
Not much more than that for me right now, but not someone to write off for sure. We've talked about Taron Armstrong quite a bit. I don't know that we need to. My beloved, my pet project this year
to convince
people that he's an NBA player. Colin Gillespie.
He's on the list.
I think he. If you maybe put down a bet right now that he gets drafted, I think I would say he gets drafted.
Ooh, gets drafted over makes a team? Can we do the Austin Reeves? Can he just go undrafted and now should probably start
maybe
for
makes
Lakers?
A team. Maybe that's the bet.
That's a better bet. I'm your consigliere with your gambling stuff. I kind of want him to play in college forever. It's like a Madden franchise. They never change a quarterback. Just let him keep playing. And I overuse the word consistency. I do. But that's what he is. I mean, the last three seasons are legit carbon copies statistically as the one before. Yeah. He's a leader. He defends. I have here, I don't know if he's an NBA player, but the next line is I don't want to bet against him. So I'm not as high, but when and if he makes it, I'm not going to be surprised either. That's like the ultimate hedge.
So, the reason I bring him up, lights out shooter now off of movement. which is like actually really important to playing as like an off-ball lead guard at the next level. Knows how to switch, knows how to play defensively within the kind of schemes he'll be asked to play in the NBA, even if he's not like great at it necessarily, but he'll be able to get by in those schemes. We have like actual proof of it that Villanova can have a great defense with him, like at the head of the snake, right? Yeah, and he just dictates tempo. Like, he knows how to play. Like, every decision is consistent. Every decision mm-hmm. is solid. It's sound. It's smart. Yeah. No, I'm in. I am generally in on Colin Gillespie. I'm not saying, like, elite-level prospect or anything, but I'm generally in on Colin Gillespie.
Yeah. Yep. We like Colin over here.
We haven't talked about Tyrese Hunter. Iowa State is a top 10 team. We did say last week that
we
probably like him a little bit more than Kennedy Chandler. I don't know what to do with Tyrese Hunter yet, to be honest, in terms of like, is he a 2022 prospect or is he a 2023 prospect?
Yeah, that probably changes my view of it too. Didn't shoot as well, I think, after we kind of gave him such glowing reviews.
Oh, no, his percentages are a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, he's at, like, 34.
It was good until it wasn't good. It's like Roadhouse. Be nice until it's time to not be nice. I'm more intrigued at 2023.
Yeah. I think we were probably a little bit high on saying that, like, we like him a little bit more than Kennedy Chandler. I don't think that that is the case for you anymore either, right?
No, I said I like Johnny Juzang more than Cam Thomas and Josh Christopher. It's I gotta watch more games. I have to stop reacting so quickly.
Okay, let's go to the mailbag section.
I have 20 plus notifications.
All right,
in my Twitter feed. I didn't look at them, but I was like, I wonder if anyone even responded, and they did. Ask the Idiot. Here we are.
Okay, we kind of talked about this a minute ago. I think it's an interesting question. How much do you pay attention to draft Twitter? This question comes from Matthew Damon, Mediocre Matt 75.
For me, I don't know for you, and I'll go first. Actually, a lot. And I don't know like how deep you want to talk about, but one of the things I was complaining about, somebody, a fellow scout in the media world I was talking to, who Paul West, said, what drives you crazy about the internet? I mean, it's in a good way. I can never break a scoop on a player playing well because, like, when you wake up, draft Twitter's already covered it. Here's the highlights. Here's the breakdown. Here's this guy from this school, somebody you've never heard of. They're always – and I say they as a collective community, and I hope I can dip my toe a little bit and wear the draft Twitter T-shirt too. But they're ahead of the game always. So I pay attention. I think I, like, temper expectations a little bit more than a lot of people on there too. They're kind of, like, more – sensational, like the takes are I like hot takes. These are like inferno takes at times, but like a lot of the number stuff, a lot of the breakdowns, like I'm always trying to read and educate myself as much as I can of that space of articles, of going to practices, going to games, going to shoot around. So it's definitely part of the process that I go through when I'm looking at guys too, or even like new names, like people I hadn't even thought of really looking at.
I do not look at it as much as you do. That is
you're canceled.
For sure.
Yeah. I feel like I have you to like tell you about the world and send you a tweet here or there. There's a lot. There actually is like a lot of good stuff. There is.
No, there is. Yeah. Like when Ben Rubin or it was Ben, wasn't it? Like when he was doing stuff for the Steppy and like it was unbelievable. Like Ben was amazing. Obviously, like, you know, I've podcasted with Cole Zwicker like hundreds of times on this show, right? There are really good people that, like, I think Petey Webb, like, does some really interesting things within this construct, right? Like, I would suggest people, like, follow him. I don't know that draft Twitter often does a great job of, like, contextualizing things.
Right.
I think that that's like a place where it kind of falls a little bit for me. Like, Evan Zamir, I think, does a pretty good job. Like, The City, too. Like, I would say, like, he's someone worth following.
Yeah, great news.
But, yeah, like, there's not... you are often the one in our relationship coming to me saying, like...
That's fine.
You see this draft Twitter thing? And I'm like, no.
My job is to make the like, boss look good. That's fine. I can be an assistant coach for this podcast.
Oh my god,
that's a good one.
I
like draft
Twitter. I'm not out on draft Twitter. It's just here's the other thing too. Like, I look at Twitter like much less often than I used to, I think is part of it as well. So, and another part of it for me is like, I often have like this crazy worry of like people infiltrating my brain in terms of like takes.
Yeah.
And I don't like, before I see someone, like I don't want to have that like initial first impression.
Preconceived notion.
And I don't, yeah. Like, I don't want preconceived notions going in. Like, I really want, I want that like different deal. I will say, like, I think there are a lot of people on YouTube that do really great work in terms of the draft as well. Like Hoop Intellect, whose name I believe is Keandre, does really good work. Adam Spinella does really good work over at the Boxing One.
Oh, yeah, Boxing One's awesome.
YouTube, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Yeah. There are some people over on YouTube. Like, if I'm going to look at the internet for like draft stuff, it'll be over there more than Twitter, I would say. Okay. Let's see here. What else do we got? We've got, who else do we have here? Okay. I'm going to have to give you the question that we wanted to avoid, 'cause I'm struggling a little bit to find a question here.
Oh boy. All right, here we go. Hit me.
From Algal Bloom 6. Where would Imani Bates be ranked on your big board if he was eligible for this year's draft?
All right, I'm going to pull up the big board in the background here. It's hard.
I'll be honest. I don't know that I would take him in the first round.
It's hard. It's hard. I'm looking. Yeah. All right, so here's the thing. Imani Bates has not played well. And we've talked about that, and I think we've given him actually like the benefit of the doubt for a while. It's not improved. Like,
for a couple of years now. If we're being real about it, it's been a couple of years.
The shooting is there like a little bit, but not really. The stuff off the dribble, it's really like bailout type of drives and flops and flails. I was having this conversation today among friends of the office, and I said something, I guess the lines of you. I said, I don't know if I would take him in the first round. But I think you'd be still drafted in the first round. And the examples used were...
I do too.
Nazlittle, and if you go way back, we talked about this, Nazlittle didn't necessarily have like the best season at North Carolina, but he's a top five kid, and those rankings kind of mattered, where if he was this good, maybe we tried out here. Jaden McDaniels is another name we talked about. He underwhelmed, he underperformed at Washington, and he still got drafted. So I would hedge and say probably in that 25 to 30 range, just based on, I have seen him in workouts not miss a jumper for five straight minutes. I have seen him dominate lower levels of competition. I mean, that age-wise, when he's playing 15 and 16 U. So if you had a guy and still a kid that has taken his lumps and not played particularly well, but you're a believer in the player that he was before, and you just got to kind of recapture that magic, taking a flyer late in the first round, even if you're like a contender, you don't need him right now, I'm not against that. I think it's crazy that people say that he'd be in the lottery. I also think it's a little bit crazy to say he'd be undrafted. There's been really bad picks late in the second round and draft and stash guys. So I think my answer would comfortably be 27. And go play for contender, go to the G League, get your actual reps in with guys who've either won championships or been around veteran locker rooms, and kind of write the course for himself.
Yeah, I would love to take Imani Bates at 31.
Yeah.
Like, don't have to give him a guaranteed deal. Would give him a guaranteed deal. Like, definitely a guaranteed, like, deal player right now for me. I think, look, we've talked a lot about Imani Bates on this show. I worry about the way he processes the game. Yeah. I worry about the lack of physical tools. Like, I know he's a 6'8" guard, and thus, like, there is some margin for error there, but he's not long. He's not all that explosive athletically. I would love to take him at 31. I would say.
Yeah, I had an NBA scout that was at the Memphis Pro Day whose takeaway was, and this was before people had kind of like jumped off the Monty bandwagon, said he's got a long way to go to get in the first round. And I thought to myself, that's kind of crazy, and now we've seen it a little bit, so maybe it makes sense. He's not draft eligible, has another year, and maybe it does kind of go up, and this is the floor a little bit.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's hard to play college basketball at 17 years old. It is very, very hard. I hope he goes in the lottery. But no, I would not take him in the lottery. Like if we were like comparing him to like names right now, like we definitely take Ben Mathurin over him, right?
No question.
We definitely take, let's see here. Here's a good one. Like, would you take Bryce McGowan's or Imani Bates?
Really good one. I'd still take Bryce McGowan's.
I think I would take Imani Bates for what it's worth. Would you take Peyton Watson or Imani Bates?
Ooh, good one, Peyton Watson.
I would probably take Peyton Watson.
Here's one for you. One of my fast risers taking the country by storm. Johnny Davis or Imani Bates?
I would probably take Johnny Davis, I think.
I mean, we're like 20s now, right? Probably somewhere in that range.
Yeah. Oshai Agbaji or Johnny? Or Oshai Agbaji or
that is very, that is very tough. I'm not going to be an ageist. Oh, gosh, that's so tough. I have to go with Agbaji right now. I do. I think it would be silly not to.
I would too.
I think I'm much higher on him, and there's a lot of people that still can't shake him not being consistent, and all of a sudden he's scoring 20 a game and doing everything we asked him to. Agbaji's kind of like knocking on the lottery for me. I know it's like hottish take, but he's put the names out there.
I've got him at like 15.
I'm looking at him at 12 right now.
Wendell Moore.
My back is against the wall here. See, Draft Twitter is going to hate me for this one because they love them some Wendell Moore. I think I'd probably go Imani Bates, but I have Wendell Moore at right now, I think right in that 30 range, right? I have him 32. So that there's the answer. You had him at 31. I have Wendell Moore at 32. It's perfect for right now.
I am a little bit more worried about Wendell Moore as a shooter.
Yeah.
Does everything else well. I think like that's the level prospect for me, like right around where Wendell Moore is.
Yep.
Would you take Keon Ellis or Imani Bates?
Imani Bates. I don't buy that Keon Ellis shooting. I think it's kind of been like overblown. He's awesome defensively, but it's like I take – he's in the NBA, so it's kind of a dumb comparison. But like, I'd take Herb Jones over him, over Keon Ellis.
Yeah, I agree with that. Look, I had Herb Jones as first-round pick last year, but like, yeah, I agree with I would take Herb Jones over Keon Ellis. I would take Imani Bates over Keon Ellis as well, I think. And I've been like pretty high on Keon throughout the process. The thing is that like, if Imani does hit for whatever reason, like you don't want to be the guy that took Keon Ellis over Imani
Bates. Yeah, that's one. That's, you know what I mean? That'd be dicey.
Okay. Last question here.
Yes.
Let's see here. Let's see here. Which one was this one? This one is from Half Awake Takes, Garrett Johnson. Rank the Arizona prospects. Ben Mathurin, Christian Coloco, Ajolis Tubelis or Dalen Terry?
I would, for this draft right here, right now,
I would say as prospects.
All right. Then I would go Mathurin, Coloco, Terry, Tubelis. But if we're going right here, right now, I'd probably flip Tubelis and Terry.
I would go Mathurin, Terry, Coloco, Tubelis.
Are you higher or lower on this is a good springboard. Where are you kind of at with Christian Coloco right now? I mean, the defense is ridiculous, right? And even like I was worried about him playing against bigger players. He plays Kofi Coburn and return to sender on many of those shots, and the offense is better. Yeah. So where are you kind of on him as a 2022 draft prospect?
Yeah, really interesting like second-round guy for me is a big. Which for us, like saying that like he's You know, someone who I think, frankly, should probably get like a guaranteed deal next year as a backup big. I would take that guy in the second round. Personally, I don't know that I am quite there in terms of thinking that he has starting center upside in the NBA. Do you?
Potentially. I'm looking as I pulled this up. I am 34 right now, so that guaranteed range could jump a little bit into the first round, but I don't see him really as
I've got him
top
probably
20
like
guy
around
right now.
Yeah, I've got him like right around like 40 or so. Like right in that range. To me, like high level potential backup center in the NBA, which is great. Like he can still make $50 million doing that.
Yeah, like, you know, buy a couple houses.
Great career. But yeah, I see him more as like a good defensive backup center, I think.
Yep. I get that.
Okay. And should we talk about Dalen Terry? Because Dalen Terry's good. I like Dalen Terry. I think he's an incredibly active defender. He gets a little bit over-aggressive at times. And by the way, like this is something I think Keon Ellis suffers from as well. I think that like both of those guys get so over-aggressive that they get blown by a little bit more regularly than what you'd like to see. Terry's an unbelievable passer. For someone who's like 6'7" and can handle the ball like that, just a real passer. If he can fix the jumper, I think he's a first-round pick in 2023.
Yeah, and
which is why I would have him ahead of Christian Coloco and Ajolas Tabellas.
Yeah, that reason makes sense. I just wanted to look and see the numbers shooting-wise. The three-point stuff's up just a little bit from 26 to 33. For as good as a passer is too, I'm sorry, is that backwards? He's actually down. He's dipped 6%. I'm an idiot. The assists, though, have gone from 1.5 to 4. He's cut down his turnovers. I agree with all this stuff defensively, too. Just hasn't really, like, scored it consistently enough for me, and that's why I had Coloco higher for right here where we are today and not taking, like, the most attempts either. So it's probably a 2023 conversation. He shot double-digit shots once.
Yeah, I think it is. He's someone that like I'm kind of expecting to have as a first round grade entering 2023.
Yeah, one of those breakout guys.
But isn't quite there yet. Yeah. Okay, prospects of the week, the game theory NBA draft prospects of the week. As usual, I will give Matt Penny the floor first. Penny, who is your game theory prospect of the week?
My game theory prospect of the week is Terrence Shannon Jr. from Texas Tech. I think I owe it to him. I think we owe it to him. He deserves a mention. He declared for the draft last year. He came back to school. He sat out the first few games out of an abundance of caution, was the wording, in regards to his NCAA eligibility. He's averaging 14 points per game, 3.2 rebounds, 2.2 assists, which would have been higher. He had back spasms in the last game last week, so his numbers just took a little bit of a dive. He plays really hard on both ends of the floor. He really defends. He's had 15 points or more in 5 games. He had 18-12 against Tennessee. Low number of reps, but he's shooting 36% from 3. The jumper looks a little bit better. It's still a little crazy. He's in the 96th percentile in transition scoring. I like him as a downhill slasher. Has a really strong frame. And when he gets out on the break, it's not one of these fake jump and throws at a defender. Like he's legit trying to put his guy on a poster. I'm a believer he's going to be better suited to the NBA with added spacing and can be more of a intangibles guy than the focal point that he is right now in offense.
Yeah, I like it. And it's always worth mentioning, too. I think Terrence Shannon's coming off of, like, a two-point game. Like, these are not, like, the best prospects of the week. They're just two guys we want to talk about.
And right? they're rolling like, into play is Gonzaga this weekend, I think, too. So, look, it's feast or famine for me. Blake Wesley, we set him up nicely to hit a game winner against Kentucky. And, hey, Terrence, you're up, buddy.
Okay. My game theory prospect of the week is Pete Nance over at Northwestern. And God, am I excited to talk about Pete Nance, because Pete Nance has been awesome this year. He's averaging 16 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists as a 6'10" big man. Much like his brother, Larry Nance, who now plays for the Portland Trail Blazers, Pete came into college like very painfully skinny. He was like 6'10". 190 pounds. He didn't really have the ability to just deal with the physicality that he needed to inside. He has now been essentially a 3-year starter for Northwestern, a really, really high level kid, apparently, like very, very smart. But the big thing here is that in addition to improving himself as an interior defender, where he can grab rebounds now, he's a pretty good weak side shot blocker. He's averaging 2 blocks per game. He's really expanded the perimeter stuff.
Yeah.
Like, can run dribble handoffs with ease now, much like his brother. Is capable of sliding out on the perimeter and running a lot of different ball screen coverages. Like, they hard hedge with him a pretty decent amount and have him recover. Actually can shoot now. Like, he is... I have some concerns about the mechanics. There's a bit of a pause at the top, but he's shooting 44% from three on 3 attempts per game so far this season. Just all of the indicators on Pete Nance right now, 16 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks per game. Those are all going to be high-level statistical indicators, especially when you put into the fact that he can be a reasonably mobile perimeter defender at 6'10". Like, I raised the question to you earlier, like, as a text message, like, Pete Nance is only half of a year older than Keegan Murray. I think it's a lot close. I think those two as prospects are a lot closer than what the general consensus of the community would say.
Right. Yeah. It's would you rather have Keegan Murray at 12 or Pete Nance at 42? You may say Pete Nance, because the other thing too is he's actually ranked as the third most efficient scorer in points per possession in transition too. So if you do it in the half court, he'll finish when you get up and down a little bit. I like the screening and rolling, and then he can pop back and shoot a little bit. Does go off the dribble more than kind of spot shoot. If that 44%
can like actually handle the ball and like run dribble handoffs and like reject a dribble handoff and then turn and drive, like there's a lot there.
It's just he's generally like a 32% shooter. If the 44 on the small sample is real, I think that kind of bumps him up too as a prospect. But if it's this value pick and you'd rather have him and take a bigger swing in the first round, I understand your reasoning for it.
Yeah, I have Pete Nance as a top 60 guy right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he is ranked anywhere else on the internet. I don't really understand why. I don't get it.
When shooting a shot gets
really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Pete Nance is like a draftable prospect. Like, much in the same vein as Jake LaRavia, the first person that we talked about on this like segment, the Game Theory Prospect of the Week. I think Pete Nance is a very real prospect, and I don't understand why he's not getting as much publicity and hype, which is why I have spotlighted it here as my Game Theory Prospect of the Week. Penny, what else we got going on? Do we have anything else exciting here? Have you started watching Succession yet? Like, have you joined the internet age? Come on.
I haven't, but I do take this as kind of like a homework assignment every week. So I did watch 2 movies. I did not watch Succession, though. I watched...
Ooh, here we go.
I watched a documentary on HBO Max, The Slow Hustle, about a murder of a Baltimore cop, potential cover-up situation type there. Thought it was good. Not great. It was a little bit slow. New information. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but maybe worth a watch.
I have not.
And then I watched on Netflix The Unforgivable with Sandra Bullock. Did you watch that? That was like the number one movie on Netflix the other day. I watched the trailer. Decent twist. Not bad. Not great. I think my wife wasn't as much of a fan, but good acting. Good. There was a lot of good names in there. Didn't really know what it wanted to be. But I tried. I gave it an effort.
Yeah, Laura and I looked at that and we were like, I don't know if this is...
Yeah, like, that's actually what it is. How is it? It was a movie.
Penny, I have big news for you.
You didn't watch a movie.
You have watched more movies than I have this week.
Wow. This might have to be the last episode then.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's possible. You're just too busy cat-sitting to dial in, I guess.
Well, I mean...
It's been slow for college basketball the last 2 nights. That's why I was able to kind of sneak these in.
Yeah, so 2 things are happening. So there is a lot of cricket happening here in Australia. there's a series called The Ashes. Okay. Have you heard of it? No, you haven't. No, you've no
Angel's
idea
Ashes,
what I'm talking
the
about.
Irish book? Yeah, I read it.
So England plays Australia in cricket, basically. And it is a thing here. Okay. And it's a day-night test series, which means it's a 5-day series where they play like 8 hours per day. What? And yes, cricket is a wild world.
Sounds exhausting to play and to consume as a viewer.
It's one of those things that is simultaneously, like, last night around 7 o'clock, I found myself going, oh, wow, this is very boring. Like, the one guy has faced, like, 270 pitches so far. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like, I'm struggling here even as a fan of cricket. And then there's also, like, a weird part of my brain that is, like, fascinated by it analytically because there's just so much going on, like, little things that you have to figure out to, like, try and get the guy out. So, yeah, no, I'm very into cricket. But the movie I did watch this week is My Voice Dies because my entire body is shutting down. Yeah, the movie I did watch this week is The Card Counter with Oscar Isaac.
Okay.
And it's Paul Schrader's new movie. It has Tiffany Haddish. It has Ty Sheridan, Willem Dafoe. I really liked it. I thought it was really good. It is essentially like an exploration of man's like moral responsibility and like the accountability that one has to face throughout his life. Because this guy is basically a card player who makes his living gambling. After getting out of prison for being an interrogator down at Abu Ghraib.
Ooh,
so
heavy.
The idea is like explaining, you know, how what is man's moral responsibility essentially to himself and to the community and everything. Really good. It was really, really enjoyable because Oscar Isaac is... Like, there are, like, probably five actors on the planet that could have done this and, like, pulled it off, and Oscar Isaac did it.
Yeah, sounds like a win. It's there's a lot of scrolling on these apps, I guess is a way of putting them. Everything's very heavy right now, and I'm trying to get more in the Christmas mood, the Christmas spirit, more The Grinch, more Home Alone watching. But I'll dive back into the darkness once the holidays pass.
Yeah, like there's a new baking show on Peacock that we see every time we go to watch Yellowstone. And it's like Maya Rudolph and Andy Samberg hosting a baking show.
Okay.
And it just looks like the most enjoyable thing, but I haven't yet been able to convince Laura to watch it.
Yeah, just watch it on a full stomach. It's one of those things like when you go grocery shopping and you're hungry, you come home and you buy way too much stuff. Just don't, you're going to start baking cakes in your kitchen with cats running around all over the place. You know, that'll be a disaster.
Okay. Penny, tell the people where they can find you on the internet. Tell the people what's going on in your life.
You can find me on the internet at @Matt_Penny. I just went to a couple prep events. I'll be at some more college stuff here in the next couple weeks. More prep stuff. Hoopball Classic is in January. We'll have a few pods in between now and then. And yeah, that's my life. That's it.
Go subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/gametheory. That's the best way that you can do that. You know, go subscribe to the YouTube channel, Game Theory Podcast. Please go subscribe. That is it's probably the most beneficial thing you can do for the podcast going forward if you're trying to support it. We will be back next week later. I think you and I will, because I'm recording another podcast tomorrow for early next week. That's all I've got though. So until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.